The Steve Lobby Agency presents The Christian Publishing Show, a podcast for writers who want to advance Christ's kingdom using the written word. Here's your host, Thomas Umstadt Jr.
Today we are going to talk about design, and this is an important topic and one that not a lot of people in the publishing industry have formal training in. Just like everyone thinks they can write the great American novel, everyone thinks they understand design. But ignorance of the complexities of a profession is not a suitable replacement for mastering those complexities. But before we can talk about good design and bad design, I want to talk about something even more fundamental. We're going to get a little philosophical here on the Christian Publishing Show, and that is the difference between art and design. It's really important to understand this difference so you can know good design when you see it, because good art and good design are different. So the purpose of art is to make people think, to make people ask questions, to elicit an emotion, joy, wonder, curiosity, grief, etc. Art makes the world better in intangible ways. And fundamentally, art is subjective. Even the purpose of art is a matter of debate. Philosophers have been debating the purpose of art for centuries, millennia actually, going back to the ancient Greeks. And I passionately debated the purpose of art in high school and in college in various honors classes that I took. And very futilely, because there isn't that kind of authority of like, this is what good art is. Something that is beautiful to one person may be ugly to another person. One person may love the colors of impressionistic paintings, while another person thinks that it's just the, you know, paintings of blind painters who can't see what's really going on. And so that's art, and that's kind of what's going on in the art world, to kind of capture it in an overly simplified nutshell. People love to debate the purpose of art, and you'll probably find some people doing that in the comments of this episode. Now, design is different. The purpose of design is to serve a function. It's to solve problems. It's to help people take a specific action. It's to make the world better in tangible ways. It is, at its heart, objective. You can use data and the scientific method to determine which of two designs is more effective. And you can say with authority, or the authority of science, that this design is bad design. And you can demonstrate not just that it is bad design, but exactly how it is bad design. So to quote Otley Acher, if I'm pronouncing that name correctly, good art inspires, good design motivates. So the key with design is to help people take action. And I think a good example of this, kind of taking a step back from the like paintings and book covers world, I want to talk about the art versus the design of a door. Okay. So the art of a door is about making the door pretty. It's about the ornamentation that the door has, the color that the door has, the aesthetics, right? How the door makes you feel when you look at it. All of those things are art. Design is about making the door easy to use, making the door function. And if it falls off the wall, it's a bad door. If it requires a sign to tell you how to operate it, it's a bad door, right? This is a classic symptom of a poorly designed door, is if it requires a sign to tell you whether to push on it or pull on it. A good, well-designed door doesn't require that, right? If there's a flat metal plate on one side, you know without reading a sign that you have to push on it because of the design. And if there's a metal handle on the other side to pull on it, you know to pull on it. And if you reverse those, if you put the push plate on the wrong side and the handle on the wrong side, it is a badly designed door, objectively so, right? People come up to it and they push on it and they can't push. Or what's more common, you put the handles on both sides. So on one side, people go up and they're able to open it with no problem. But on the other side, people always do it the wrong way the first time. And, you know, they don't see the sign and read the text. Or maybe they do and they sit and they ponder it and it causes people to back up behind them. That is bad design. And this is a famous example from the design community. But we're not talking about doors, ultimately, in this episode. We're talking about other aspects of design that affect authors. And design affects authors in more than just the book cover. It also affects authors when it comes to websites and book titles as well, or at least designed by committee, which is what we're going to be talking about. So why is good design important? Well, everyone judges a book by its cover. Everyone. So, you know, sayings that people don't obey notwithstanding, this is what everyone does. Librarians judge books by their covers. Editors judge books by their covers. Readers judge books by their covers. Journalists judge books by their covers. But they don't just judge books by their covers. They also judge your website by how it looks. Especially journalists, event coordinators, and other influencers will judge an author by the design of their website. And in the question that the website's design is answering is, does this author have good taste? And I will say the design of the cover is in some cases more important than the reputation of the author. And there's a really sad example of this. I'm a big fan of the author Brandon Sanderson. He writes fantasy and science fiction, and I read every single one of his books at one point, except for the Mistborn trilogy. At the time, it was just a trilogy. Why? Because the covers of the Mistborn books were so terrible. Objectively, because they look like not the kind of books that he would write. They look like books from a different genre, a genre that I didn't read, that I didn't read those books for years. And it wasn't until many years later that I went back, listened to those books, you know, because I do everything on audiobook, and I fell in love with them, and they're great. And to Brandon Sanderson's credit, he knows that those were bad covers. He's gotten the covers replaced, at least in some of the editions of his books. And the new covers are much, much better. So the purpose of a book cover, again, we're talking about motivating. What's the motivation? What's the action you want to motivate people to take with a book cover? To buy the book. So a good book cover motivates people to buy the book. A bad book cover does not. And then cover design is the most important aspect of the book for potential readers because it's the only aspect of the book for potential readers. They haven't read it yet. They don't know if it's a good book. They only have the cover on which to judge the book. And the cover establishes your micro genre for better or for worse. So in the Brandon Sanderson example, he had established the wrong micro genre. It made it look like it was literary fiction. And I don't read literary fiction, but I do read fantasy. And the covers just didn't look fantastic enough. They were too artistic. They were attracting a kind of reader that I imagine when they read the book and realized that it was a heist set in a fantastic world, they were quite disappointed as well. So we failed to attract the right kind of people and was able to attract the wrong kind of reader for his book, which probably hurt his reviews in the early days. And I remember listening to him talk once on a podcast about how the sales initially of his Mistborn series were underwhelming and less than they expected. And they were kind of surprised by this. And I'm like, I'm not surprised. He had bad book covers. He's gone on to become a New York Times bestselling author, though. So he's doing okay. All right. So we talked about design. We talked about what design is, what design isn't, and why it's important. Now let's talk about design by committee. So when a group of what is designed by committee? It's when a group of people weighs in on the design of something, especially when everyone's voices are treated equally. What causes design by committee is typically fear, right? So an organization or an individual is afraid of making the wrong decision, and so they are seeking safety in a multitude of advisors. And there's nothing wrong with getting feedback, but there's a right way to do it and a wrong way to do it. And we're going to talk about the right and wrong ways to do it here in just a second. But ultimately, good design requires boldness. It requires making decisions, and it requires clarity of thinking, of knowing exactly who it is that you're trying to reach and what it is you're trying to get them to do. Also, something that everyone likes is typically something that no one loves. So part of, you know, knowing who the design is for is also knowing who the design is not for. And when you design something for everyone, you design something for no one specifically. And good design, especially behind websites and book covers, is for the specific person. We want things tailored to us specifically or to our needs specifically. Compromise on the other hand, which is when you're trying to make everyone a little bit happy, leads to bad design, right? The classic example is it's a camel. A camel is a horse designed by a committee. Or a metaphor that I like better is if you think of a recipe, right? You have a cook and they're like serving a room full of people about what their favorite foods are and trying to make everyone happy. You end up with ketchup peanut butter on ice cream, right? It's like it's a monstrosity. And this is where design monstrosities come from. And you typically know design monstrosities because no single person is responsible. Why? Because there's a committee that unwittingly caused the design to be either a monstrosity or at best mediocre. And design by committee very often leads to mediocre, where all of the personality, all of the sizzle is taken out of the design. So how can you get feedback from people while avoiding that mediocrity, right? So you can have that safety in a multitude of counselors. Well, the first thing you need to realize is that not everyone's opinion is useful. In fact, some opinions can be harmful. And this makes sense, right? If you've read the book of Proverbs, you know not to take advice from fools, right? Well, some people are fools when it comes to design. And so you want to be very careful who you ask for feedback from. And my advice would be to only ask design experts, so people with formal training or a lot of real-world experience in design, with that scientific method of measuring, understanding true design and not art, right? You can take a world-class artist, give them a design project, and they will fail because that's not what they are used to doing. It's like having a football player play American football, right? Some of it is similar, but other parts of it are very different, and that you can't just put them on the field and expect them to score a touchdown. And so you can ask experts, and you can also ask people who are inside your target market. So if you're writing for teenage boys, it does not matter what teenage girls think of the cover, right? Or it doesn't matter if what older women think of the cover, unless you're also trying to sell those older women who have teenage boys as children, maybe then you would consider it, but then you would identify them as a part of your target market. Or flip it around. Let's say you're writing to adult women. You don't care what teenage boys think of the cover, right? The teenage boy looks at the cover of your romance book and is like, oh, boring. You don't care. And trying to accommodate that teenage boy's opinion would actually make the cover worse because that's not who you're trying to reach. I hope these are kind of extreme examples, but I hope that it makes sense. And this is true across all genres. So when you're asking the advice of normal people, you only want to be heeding the advice of people inside your target market. Otherwise, you're going to end up with that ketchup on ice cream. Now, when you're talking with experts, it's very important to explain to them who the target market is for the design, whether it's a book cover, whether it's a book title, whether it's a website, whatever you're getting feedback on. You want to explain and describe that target market, and you want to explain to them the goal that you're trying to accomplish. This is a big mistake people often make, especially if they don't have formal training in design. They don't realize that the purpose of design is to accomplish goals. And so if they don't define what those goals are, the designer often has to guess, just come up with a goal in her mind or his mind. And if that goal is the wrong goal and you haven't had a conversation about what the goal is, you may have a terrible design completely by accident. Also, it's very important to try to look at people's behavior rather than their words when you're getting feedback from normal folks. So when you survey people and when you ask people their opinions, they often will just give you answers that aren't true. Like they don't know themselves in a deep enough way. So a good example of this is the iPad. When it launched, everyone, the entire internet, made fun of the name for a week, maybe a month, right? They were like, oh, it's a maxi pad. It's a women's feminine product. No one makes that joke anymore. The name iPad is a really good name. It's a shorter, pithier, better name than the other names they were considering, but it required the boldness and it required looking at people's behavior, not at people's words. Other examples of this are like common rebrandings. When a company changes its logo, people often whine and whine about it for the first week and then they don't notice anymore. So like Google changed its new logo to be more like those children's letters, magnetic letters you put on a refrigerator. And, you know, that was key for their strategy, right? Because they're now owned by a parent company named Alphabet. And so they wanted to kind of connect the brand with that bigger brand. And thus the logo change, right? There was solid rationale behind the logo change. And everyone, you know, rolled their eyes or complained about it for a week, but I bet you haven't noticed it and it hasn't bothered you. In fact, if you look at it now compared to the old one, you probably prefer it. That is the sign of good design. So another way that you can get feedback from people without leading to mediocrity is to ask why after they tell you what they tell you. Sometimes you have to ask why a few times in a row, you know, connect with your inner toddler to get that deep why behind the why. And this will help you understand and get back to the language of goals and objectives in target audiences, which is the essence of design. And, you know, if you don't know what those are, and if the person giving you feedback doesn't know what those are, their feedback, you don't know what to do with it. Another way to think of this is to ask for problems instead of asking for solutions. Back when I ran a web design agency, this was a really key technique that we used. Because oftentimes, we would be on the other side of the phone call. We'd be working with a author or a business who didn't know design, and they were giving us feedback. And we found that when they would tell us what to do, behind that instruction was a problem that they were trying to fix, but one that we didn't know about. So we would have to ask them why several times. And to get to, you know, when they say, oh, make the text bolder, it's like, why do you want the text bolder? Oh, well, it's hard to read as a thumbnail. When I look at this book cover and it's very, very small, I can't read the text, and I'm afraid people looking at it on Amazon won't be able to read the text, so I want you to make it bolder. Well, now as a designer, once you've identified that problem, low text contrast. There are more than one way to solve that problem. Designers have a whole toolbox of ways of solving the text is hard to read when it's really small problem. And making the text bolder is only one of those solutions and may not be the best solution, right? Because, you know, maybe the real reason the text is hard to read is because the background is too busy, right? There's lots of different colors in the background. They're contrasting, you know, they're not contrasting enough with the text. And so the text is kind of camouflaged into the background. Well, in that case, making the text bolder isn't the right solution. And then a better solution would be to simplify the background in some way, or maybe put a color, a solid color behind the text, or maybe to change the font size, or maybe move where the text is on the cover altogether. Right? Move it away from that busy part of the image, move it to a less busy part of the image. There's many ways of solving these problems, and you want the designer to find the best solution. And the best solution is not going to be from you, typically, because you're not a designer, right? There's a reason why you're hiring a professional, and they need your perspective because you understand your target audience better than they do. You understand your book better than they do. And so when you talk about problems and solutions, and specifically where you identify the problem and they provide the solutions, that's where you get the best design. So if we change professions here, maybe it might make a little sense. So you bring your car into a car mechanic and you say, my engine is clicking, or my car squeaks when I come to a stop. I want you to change my oil so the car stops squeaking. Well, you know, an honest mechanic will listen to you describe what you think the solution is and be like, well, I don't think that changing the oil will cause it to stop squeaking, because typically when cars squeak, when you come to a stop, it's because the brakes are about to give out. It's not a matter of whether your car is lubricated or not. It's a matter of what shape your brakes are in. And so the trained mechanic would then look at the brakes and be like, oh, yes, the brakes need to be changed. And you don't need an oil change. You just got it changed 1,000 miles ago or whatever. This is my own example, so I guess it's 1,000 miles ago. So anyway, and a few other tips. You know, don't incorporate everyone's advice. I've said this before, but I want to say it again. Some people's advice is like worse than nothing, because they are speaking for a constituency you are not trying to thrill with your book. Your book's not for everyone, and you need to understand that. Because you want to have an audience that's so thrilled with your book, they evangelize it to the other audiences. And you're not going to get that by trying to please everyone. And then another thing you can ask when you're getting feedback from somebody is, what emotions does this cause, right? How does this make you feel? And try to separate out that art language from that design language. Because this is one of the interesting things. Design, if making something uglier helps get more of the results that you want, you make it uglier because the goal of design is to get those results. So Amazon.com found that if they made the buy button or the add to cart button a really ugly orange, you know, the only orange on the page, that orange, that particular shade of orange, got more clicks than any other color that they tested. And so on Amazon.com, they have this really ugly buy button because they use science to determine that it was the most effective buy button. And you know what? People got used to it. You don't think about what an ugly button that is, but it does pop off the page because it's so different from the rest of the page. If they'd have made it pretty, if that button had blended in to the design, fewer people would have clicked it and Amazon would be making less money. All right. So how do you give? So we talked about getting feedback, right? As you have some book covers, if you're indie, you may have, you know, several to choose from. Maybe even if you're traditionally published and they're wanting your thoughts. You know, both indie and traditional authors are a part of the process. With indie authors, though, they are the one paying the piper, so they're the ones who call the tune, whereas traditional authors, the publisher is paying the piper. The publisher is calling the tune, but they are asking for your feedback. But either way, you want to give useful feedback to the designer. So let's talk about how to do that. One thing you want to do is consolidate all of the feedback that you have into a single document. Usually this is an email. And what we would used to do back when I ran a design agency, we would have a phone call so we could explain the why behind the decisions that we were making and would understand the why behind the feedback that the author was giving us. But then we would have them send us an email afterwards, or we would send them an email and have them confirm just to get it all on one page, because it's harmful to send email in little batches. Right, where you get a little bit of feedback here, you get a little bit of feedback here, and get a little bit of feedback, because each time you get a new batch of feedback, it changes the parameters of the design. It's kind of like somebody adding ingredients to your cooking halfway through a meal. That's just like, whoa, time out. Give me all the ingredients, put them all on a table, and then I'll figure out what the best dish is to make with these ingredients. Don't wait where I'm halfway in the soup, and then suddenly you give me some turnips to add, and I'm like, this soup is not going to work with turnips. And, you know, if you'd have told me sooner, I could have changed the recipe, and we'd have made it work with turnips. Another thing I recommend is to sleep on it. People often have really strong emotional reactions to their book covers, or their website designs, partly because they're so invested, right? You've spent years working on your book and you really care about the design. And often because, you know, if you haven't had a training in design, you don't have the vocabulary to really describe what you're feeling. And so that causes the emotions to be felt even more, which I'm, you know, observing, you know, with my daughter, right? She doesn't have vocabulary. She has mama is the only word she can say. And so she can't communicate to us very clearly what she's feeling. And it can cause her to get frustrated, right? It can cause her to cry when we tried five different things, you know, and none of those are the things that are causing her to cry. You know, she's learned to point, which is like the super word. Oh my gosh. So many things can be solved with her pointing, and yet so many things can't be described with her pointing, right? How do you point to tell your mom that you're hot? How do you point to tell your mom that you're cold? So, you know, we got this book of baby sign. We've been trying to teach her baby sign, but I will say I'm the problem there because I haven't learned baby sign. But anyway, it's okay to be emotional and to have strong emotional feelings about your design, but it's not useful to the designer if you respond super emotionally right away. So that's why I recommend that you sleep on it. You know, let the dust settle so you can have a calmer, more productive conversation about how to make the design the best it can be. Another thing to do is ask questions. So remember, the designer is the professional. This is what they do for a living. And you don't want to squander that expertise by taking over the design yourself by giving orders. That's really a waste of money, and you're really doing yourself a disservice when you do that. You want the designer to solve the problems. You want to help the designer understand what the problems are and who's having those problems. But ultimately, you really want to lean on that designer's expertise. Also, picking your battles. and be willing to defer to the designer's expertise, you will really get better designs that way. I was talking with an author recently, and she was talking about how she would give feedback on her book covers, and she would always get back a worse book cover after her feedback because she was a very talented author, but she wasn't a talented designer, and she had to just defer to the expertise of the designers because she realized that she just didn't have the vocabulary to help make it better. And don't be like that boss, right? Everyone knows the bad boss who wants his feedback incorporated just because he wants to have felt like he contributed, even if the feedback is like that, right? We've all worked for somebody like that. Don't be that kind of person, right? Be willing to defer to the expertise of the designer. Now, this doesn't mean that you roll over and you let a bad design happen, right? If they're designing a cover or a website for the wrong audience, which is probably the most common mistake that designers make in this industry, you need to stand up for your potential readers and say, hey, this is targeting the wrong audience. This is the person I want you to target. And then another way that helps is to use data to make decisions. So I have an episode on my other podcast, Novel Marketing, about how to use split testing to test scientifically which design works better. So what you don't want to do is like post a poll or a survey and get feedback from all of your readers, because there's several reasons why this is flawed. The first biggest problem is that you're having people's full attention on your book cover, which is not replicating a real-world situation. So in the real world, people are buying your book. They're in a bookstore where there's hundreds or thousands of other book covers all screaming for attention, or they're online where there's hundreds or thousands of other book covers screaming for attention, and your book cover is just one of the many options. And so no one's ever going to look at it and give it that careful, considered attention that people taking a poll would give it. And so you don't want to talk, that data that you're getting from people taking the poll is useless. Right? They'll notice all the subtlety. They'll notice all the nuance that will get lost for people in the real world. So instead, what I recommend is split testing, where you buy ads. Typically, this is done on Facebook. You can do it other places as well. And you test two versions, right? Ad A has cover A, ad B has cover B, and you see which ad gets more clicks. See, this is what's different between art and design. With design, you can know, oh, design B was 15% more effective at getting clicks than design A. So it's the better design. You can use data to help you make that decision. A very famous example of this is the book, The 4-Hour Workweek. The author, Timothy Ferris, tested title ideas with Google ads. And he bought a bunch of different Google ads with different titles, and the 4-Hour Workweek title got the most clicks, and it went on to be a runaway bestseller, set his career up. He sold millions of copies, all because he used data to make decisions. And that is really easy to replicate. You just need to work with designers who are okay with working data into the decision-making process. And I find the best time to have that conversation is before you hire them. After you hire them, you're like, hey, I want to start doing some tests, they're going to get weirded out. And you have less negotiating position at that point, because you've already given them some money. You've already signed a contract. And so some final tips on how to have good design, whether it's a book cover, a website, or coming up with a book title for your book, what works. The first tip is to work with an experienced professional. If you have a background of being, say, a creative director in a design firm or marketing agency, you can get good designs out of less experienced people. And I've seen this. I have worked with exceptional creative directors who are able to work with very beginning level designers and get them to create gold. Partly by taking them through this process that I'm talking about, identifying, target audiences, identifying goals and helping them solve those goals in creative ways. And they're able to work through those beginners. But chances are that's not you. So what you need is somebody who comes in with their own experience, where they are the professional. You want to work with a doctor, not a nurse, right? Because the nurse assists the doctor in creating something or solving a problem. You can't be the doctor in the relationship unless you've gone to medical school, or in this case, design school, to get back on the back off the metaphor. Another thing that's really helpful is to clearly identify a single representative target reader. This is a, and I've changed my advice on this, because what I used to do is say, come up with a fictional person, right? And create all of their stats. But having gone through this exercise with hundreds of authors, I found that invariably what gets created is a very generic person. And even when we try to create an avatar person where it's like, no, she can't be between the ages of 30 and 40. She has to be a specific age, right? Because no human being is two ages at the same time. I find that it's far more useful to just pick a reader and say, this is my Timothy that the Book of Timothy is for. And it doesn't mean that only Timothy reads the Book of Timothy, right? Billions of people have read the Book of Timothy. But the fact that it was written to a specific person who stood in for everyone else focused the writing and made it very personal, very intimate. And that is what leads to good design. So often it's a good idea to write to that individual person, but it's really important to describe that individual person, that bullseye in the middle of the target for your designer, right? Be like, this is Barbara. She's my representative reader. She's 55 years old. She has three kids. She works here. She goes to this church, right? You completely describe her. And ideally, Barbara is a real person in your life, or a real reader who you know. That, you know, if I can thrill Barbara, I'll thrill everyone else as well. You can still create a persona or an avatar, but if you can find a real human being, I find that that is more useful for everyone. Because knowing how to create a persona is, again, it requires a lot of training and skill to do it well. Another thing that really helps with good design is to clearly identify the goals. How is this design going to be used, and what is it intended to accomplish? Remember, design is objective. So you want to know, what will make this design succeed? How will you know if the design is successful, and what would make the design fail? If you can be very, the more clear you are about those goals, and the more clear you are about the target reader, the more you give your designer to work with, to really blow your socks away with an amazing design that won't be designed by committee. Our sponsor this week is the Christian Writers Institute. And the course of the week is When to Break the Rules of Writing. When is it okay to break the rules of writing? Author Alan Gansky reveals his answer to that question in this one-hour presentation. Gansky looks at the rules, quote-unquote, for book proposal formats, grammar, and then discusses when breaking those rules is viable and even a favorable option to the author. This course is a bargain right now in the Christian Writers Institute. It's only $6, but you can save 10%. You can save 60 cents if you use the coupon code podcast at checkout, or click the show notes click the link in the show notes to activate the coupon code automatically. And a quick apology. I know many of you are hoping to meet me at ACFW, and I was planning to go to ACFW. In fact, I'd even purchased a non-refundable hotel stay, and my daughter, my 11-month-old daughter, got sick. She got a cold for the first time in her life, and then she gave it to my pregnant wife. And so instead of being at ACFW with all of you wonderful people, I was at home with a sick family who then shared their wonderful germs with me. So, hopefully everything sounded well, and I appreciate all of you, and thank you all so much for listening.
Thank you for listening to the Christian Publishing Show. For more information and to get episodes delivered to your phone automatically, visit christianpublishingshow.com.